This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Darryl Bock is research professor at Dallas Theological Seminary and the author of many books and articles about Jesus and the New Testament. In the first part of the interview, we covered whether we can be certain that Jesus existed. And no surprises there, we can be. In this segment, we started by asking him how he responds to the challenge that the four Gospels are not the only authoritative sources, and whether the Gnostic Gospels contribute anything to our historical understanding of Jesus.
They don't contribute much to the historical portrait of Jesus because they don't have the line of transmission that goes back to the apostolic roots that the four Gospels do. What they do reflect, and what's important, and the reason why scholars are interested in them, is they do reflect the kind of diversity that emerged in Christianity, particularly in the second and third centuries as other philosophical influences came to be mixed with the Christian faith. And the reason we know this is important, the reason we know this is that in earliest Christianity is really came out of Judaism. In fact, it was Judaism. It was a call to reform Judaism, and out of that came a view of God as the creator, that the creation was initially good but had become flawed by the way in which man had reacted to God, poorly to God, that kind of an idea. Well, these other Gospels reflect views that are more like what's called Gnosticism. And Gnosticism believes that the creation did not come from God. It came from underling gods, and that creation was flawed from the very beginning. So a Christianity that came out of Judaism wouldn't believe that. And so we know that the line running through to these Gnostic Gospels with that kind of a view of a creation can't go all the way back to the earliest Christianity that was Jesus and the apostles, because they reflected Jewish views about God and creation.
I've always thought that if people had any idea of how anti-creation these Gnostic texts were, they'd lose their popularity instantly.
Well, I actually think what has happened with these extra-biblical Gospels is that they've been what we call cherry-picked in the United States. I don't know if you have that expression here. But the idea here is that you get this verse and that verse that kind of sounds nice and kind of fits the spirit of the age, but there's a whole lot of stuff you're not told about. For example, some people will remember the hullabaloo around the Gospel of Judas a few years ago, in which the point was, well, here's Judas being portrayed somewhat positively, which actually has turned out not to be true, but that's a whole other story. But the thing that's most fascinating is if you read the Gospel of Judas, which is only 7 pages long, you can read it in 6 minutes, you will see that the bulk of it is about the creation of the angels, the flaw in the creation, et cetera, stuff no one talked about when it was in the press. And if you just read it through, you would go, this is a crazy document. It doesn't make very much sense at all, or at least it certainly reflects a worldview and an approach to things that's very different than anything not only I see in the Bible, but in some of the other extra-biblical texts that we do have contact with.
So what gives you confidence that the New Testament Gospels provide an accurate picture of Jesus?
Well, I think if someone understands the way in which orality operated in Judaism and the way in which transmission took place orally with a kind of care, it has a flexibility built in it, but it also has a kind of care to make sure that the gist of the story is retained, you will understand the importance of this material and its rootage. And then even though we've got different Gospels that look at someone from slightly different angles, it still gives us a full portrait of who Jesus is. I like to use the comparison of instant replay with sporting events. And again, I'll use an American illustration. I hope it translates. In the United States, when we first did instant replay, we had one or two camera angles on the play, which allowed us a couple of views and allowed us to make a judgment. But today, for the big sporting events, we have multiple camera angles. You literally can go from 6 or 7 directions. Well, the more angles you look at a subject, the fuller the portrait to get, the more you can triangulate. In fact, when you digitize it today, you can actually do a 360 by triangulating the cameras. And I actually think the Gospels work a lot like this. They give us different angles on Jesus, how he impacted different people and different communities, and we get a fuller orbed picture of him than if we were just telling one single story.
But problems remain, right? I mean,
that's right.
You've written at length about, say, the real differences in the genealogies in Luke and Matthew, and the fact that Luke seems to place Quirinius as governor of Syria in 4 BC, around Jesus'
way too early.
Way too early, 10 years too early. So there are problems still.
There absolutely are. And I don't think that these problems are insoluble. Part of what we have to remember is that even though we are dealing with ancient materials and we have a lot of ancient materials, we actually only have a very small portion of what actually existed at the time. So we're always dealing with partial documentation, even with what we have. We have enough to be able to get somewhat of a portrait, but sometimes we don't have enough to get a completely clear picture on some of the details. And with Quirinius, I think this is an example of one of a couple of things that could be happening. Some people say the grammar of the way in which the passage is introduced suggests that perhaps this census took place before Quirinius was governor rather than when he was governor. That would alleviate the difficulty. That's actually not the way I solve it. I actually think that this process of census taking took some time, and the census became attached to Quirinius because he completed it, but not necessarily that he was responsible for the start of it. And this allows some time to take place for the administration. You know, not everything was hooked up by computer in the first century, and so it just takes a little bit of time to pull some of these things off.
Some would hear that and say, "Oh, that's just fundamentalist apologetics. That's not real scholarship." Do you need to sign off on every little problem in the New Testament?
I actually don't think you do in order to accept the gist of what's going on. We actually do this in our courts and in our history all the time. We don't necessarily have to believe everything a witness is telling us to believe that the core things that the witness is telling us are true. The jurors make judgments about witnesses in this kind of a way all the time. Now, I happen to think that in many cases there are explanations, because sometimes, interestingly enough, the truth of the way coincidences happen within history sound odd. So it can happen, but I don't rest everything on that.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.